Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell is here waiting to ask questions of Simon Singh.
It's interesting to me. You do a wonderful job of making mathematics. You started out talking about the aesthetics of mathematics and how, you know, all these wonderful, beautiful theories and proofs and things. And aesthetics, it tends to be a matter of taste and a matter of choice. I'm not sure everybody thinks of solving mathematical equations and the things that go on with that as being aesthetically beautiful, particularly with your background in physics, because physicists and mathematicians have historically had a fairly occasionally tense,
acrimonious
at times, but a collaborative relationship for at least, what, 2,000, 2,500, 3,000, maybe longer
years.
But you succeed in doing something that I really had not seen anybody do before, and that is to make that aesthetic sense accessible to more people. And I'm curious, is that a consequence of the physics? Is it a consequence of the time you've taken to study it? Or is it just your tastes?
I think it's just, my background is in television. And I grew up watching Carl Sagan and James Burke, and I love these popularizers of science.
James Burke, if somebody doesn't know him, I think everybody knows Carl Sagan, but James Burke did a whole series about the impact of the great ideas over the course of human history.
And what these people did was that they told stories. They explained science in context. And that's what I try and do as well. I mean, I having loved watching television, I made television programs for a while, and now when I write about science, I try and do the same thing. I try and have a story which brings out the aesthetic. And with maths, the analogy that I used once was that I know nothing about music. I can't play an instrument. I look at a sheet of music, it means nothing to me.
This is true?
Oh, this is true, absolutely true. I'm notation, musical notation means nothing to me. But I can hear a symphony and I can be moved. I don't have to understand the notes. I can just listen to the music and be moved. Now, with mathematics, some people will look at a page of mathematical symbols and it will mean nothing to them. Sadly, there isn't a music of maths. They can't just sit back and just hear the maths wash over them. The only way to understand and appreciate maths is to begin to understand some of the notation and some of the ideas. So what I try and do is just give people a glimpse of that.
So that they can begin to, as it were,
hear the music of maths. Yeah, that's one way to put it. Yeah.
Well, in a sense, music is a special case of mathematics.
Yes, and so people keep telling me, and because I know nothing about music,
<No.
laughs> so take it on faith.
Well, yeah, the ratio of octaves and things are all, you know, governed by mathematical rules, the maths is there underlying it.
In a sense, it's like a language, which for most people is a foreign language and a difficult. It's like, an American trying to learn Chinese. There's so many differences from what we're accustomed to. But the ability to read that language, in a sense, is what you're talking about. Aesthetics aside, but just the ability to look at a set of symbols and to understand what those symbols represent.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes you don't need to understand. I mean, one of the lovely things I learned when I was researching the story of Pierre de Fermat was the number 26 is unique. Now, it's unique because it's sandwiched between 25 and 27. 25 is what we call a square number. 5 squared, 5 times 5 is 25. 27 is a cube number. 3 times 3 times 3 is 27. So you have this number 26 sandwiched between a square and a cube. And it's the only number that is sandwiched between a square and a cube. There are an infinite number of numbers, and it's extraordinary that this is the only case. An infinite number of square numbers, you know, 81, 100, 144, whatever. An infinite number of cube numbers, 27, 81, 64. But there are no other numbers sandwiched apart from 26. And that's extraordinary. How can this be such a unique case amongst an infinity of numbers? And how would you ever go about proving that this is the case? How does somebody know this is true? You can't check every number up to infinity. And so maths can give you these examples, And then it goes one step further and explains why 26 is special. And you can prove it with about four or five lines of math. Then you know, then you start needing to understand, you then need to understand some basic notation, but not that much. And pretty soon you too can understand why 26 is special. And the numerous other elements of maths that, that the non-mathematician, I think, can begin to grasp.
One of the interesting things about both your books is that I think most of us would believe that mathematics, particularly pure mathematics, represents the sort of the apotheosis of the operation of the front brain. It is pure logic. It is purely rational. It requires that you be logical and rational. And yet, time after time, both with respect to codes, encoding and decoding, encryption and decryption, and with respect to the proofs of theorems and such, regularly people's the insights come from somewhere else, which is to me a striking phenomenon.
Yeah, there was a big festival in London this summer.
The summer of 2000?
Yeah, just this September.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Creating Sparks, and it was held in South Kensington. Now, South Kensington, there was a big sort of a World's Fair, I think, in 1851, and everything from the British Empire was brought to Hyde Park and exhibited. And this made such a profit that the money was used to build the museums. So in South Kensington, you have the Natural History Museum, the Victoria and Albert Museum, the Science Museum, the Geology Museum, all there. And they had this celebration, which was a mixture of art and science. And it was called Creating Sparks. And the idea was to show that art and science have a great deal in common. And I'm not sure they have a great deal in common.
But it was probably also profitable.
Well, yeah, it was a nice idea. But what they do have in common, and I don't think they really exploited this enough, even though the title is Creating Sparks, is that they have creativity in common. And maths, as you say, is part... if I'm trying to solve a problem, I have this problem in front of me, I have no idea where to start. It's a new problem. No one has ever solved it before. Do I begin by differentiating the equation? Do I begin by taking a geometrical approach? Do I begin by plotting some graphs? Do I begin by programming? Where do I even begin? And you then need instinct to somehow encourage you forward. And once you have an instinct, once you begin to use that creative side of yourself to imagine a way forward, then you need to be fairly ruthless in your logical progression of that line of thought. But you can't get anywhere without imagination, because imagination gives you that first leap of enthusiasm to pursue a line of argument.
There's a curious phenomenon that you point to, which is generally, though not in every case, in fact, you talk about the exception, the major progress in math seems to have been made by young people. And when you say young, you know, you're talking fairly young, under the age of 30, and frequently under the age of 20, if I understand the
yep, yep.
And that, in a way, makes sense with what you're saying. On the other hand, it's almost counterintuitive, because you would think that the intuitions would be predicated on years and years of experience, and that somehow this vast reservoir of knowledge and experience would bubble up, and you would come up with these fresh insights.
Yeah, I think the more training and education and experience you have, the more your creativity can be reined in, because people have told you this can't be done. They've told you that this isn't a good way to do something. Whereas when you're 19,
you don't know any better.
You don't know any better, and you just do it, and you have the mathematical talent
and the energy.
Yes,
you talk about God's fool as you're talking about breaking codes. It was a wonderful moment. Let's pick up with God's fool and come back with Simon Singh, and we'll talk a little bit more, maybe a lot more, about this whole business of encryption and decryption, and we'll start with God's fool. Bill Russell is here. He is not that. He is co-host of the Paula Gordon Show. So we'll be back in just a minute.